Let's bring in Ben Nicholson-Smith, baseball editor at Sportsnet.ca and co-host of our At the Letters podcast. We'll talk about the Jays' 12-2 loss to the Mets, although quite frankly, anything that allows us to talk about something else other than that abomination is probably not an entirely bad thing. Ben, look, I had my say at the start of the show. Joey Votto's an odd bird. He just is. He's a different guy. He's got a different sense of humor. People who've interviewed him, he can be a pain in the ass to deal with. He can be really good to deal with. He can be the master of the one-word answer. He can be the master of blowing you off, of not giving you the time of day. He can be completely introspective. There's really no middle ground with Joey Votto. I talked to some of the Reds broadcasters. He drives them nuts at times. They also love him at other times. So I'm throwing that out there. But what was your take on this? Like, my first reaction, honestly, was, okay, that was kind of Joey's offbeat sense of humor, and it had fallen flat. It was like a bad stand-up comedian. But I got the impression from this apology that there's something more at work there.
Yeah, well, the apology seems pretty sincere. I mean, that's a lengthy apology, just hearing you read through it right there. I mean, he obviously put some work into making sure that he was hitting the right notes, and clearly after, striking the wrong tone in his answer on the Yahoo podcast. So yeah, I tend to think we all say dumb stuff at times. And in this case, he kind of got in his own way with his comments about Canadian baseball, but I tend to take his apology at face value and think that, when you look at what he said there, seems pretty sincere to me, and I'm certainly willing to take it at face value and accept it and move on.
Why the hell would a guy who's in the middle of a $225 million contract, a contract that he agreed to, be upset that he wasn't drafted by the Blue Jays out of high school or wasn't named to an Olympic team in the minor leagues? And the other thing too is, it's not as if this is a guy who's boycotted Baseball Canada since then, right? He's come to various events. He's put his time in. I don't know. Maybe there's been some sort of strained relationship with the powers that be in Baseball Canada. I think you have to have a serious flaw as a human being to have an issue with Greg Hamilton. From where I stand, he's one of the best people I've dealt with in anything. I really wonder if this isn't just a further sign, along with some of the comments he made in that podcast, Ben, that, it is time for Joey Votto and the Cincinnati Reds to move on from each other. It really is. Like, this is not going to end well. The team is not very good. It's not going to be very good for 2 or 3 years. It's time for Joey Votto to get his ass out of Cincinnati, isn't it?
Well, I can definitely see that, because you see the frustration in his comments that he made on the Yahoo podcast. And certainly, you look at what he's saying about the current Reds team, and they are not playing well. And it would be very frustrating to be on a team that is going nowhere. So at this point in his career, probably 5 years left and 5 good years potentially, just given how well he's aged and how good of a player he still is. Well, you might actually want to end up going somewhere else. And I don't know. I can't speak to his personal preferences on this one, but it would be a lot of fun as a baseball fan to see Joey Votto in a different uniform and contending again, because it's just been a long time since we've seen him play in games that matter. And it's almost like, Mike Trout with the Angels when they were irrelevant for a few years there. You want to see the best players in the biggest moments, and Joey Votto is one of the best players, and it would be a lot of fun to see him in October again.
It's funny. Shai and I had this discussion. Shai Davidi and myself had this discussion the other day, and we were talking about Joey Votto's contract, and the contract runs through 2023. It's $225 million. He gets $25 million annually from now until 2023. In 24, there's a $20 million club option with a $7 million buyout. And, you roll your eyes when you think of that contract and what he's going to be paid at the back end. But if you kind of look at Joey Votto, the hitter, his skill set should age pretty well. And Ben, I'm not certain if there isn't a little bit of, this is going to sound odd, but I'm not certain that there isn't a little bit of value in the back end of that contract. If you operate under the assumption that, what is it, one war equals about $8 million, your question is, can Joey Votto be something in the neighborhood of a 2.5 to 3 war player at the end of his career? He might be able to do that.
Yeah, I think he definitely might be able to. And he's one of those exceptional hitters who might age pretty well. You know, you see guys like Adrian Beltre stay productive until they approach 40. It's rare, certainly, but when you look at Votto and his pure hitting ability, the way he conditions himself, you definitely wonder. At the same time, sometimes guys lose bat speed. And, you know, we've seen that with Jose Bautista. We've seen that with other players as they approach 40. And you never know. But I do think, and the way I tend to look at these questions of contracts and values is I say, okay, if you put Joey Votto on the free agent market today, and every team has the chance to bid for him, what kind of contract does he get? And I think he probably would get, I think he has around 125, you said, remaining on the deal. When you look at the total guaranteed money, I think he'd end up in that neighborhood. I mean, no one's going to sign him for a $200+ million deal again, but I don't think he's signing for, like, you know, 60/3. I think he's a much better player than your Carlos Santana tier. And so I don't think that his contract is necessarily a bad one at all. It's probably pretty much fair value.
All right, let's shift focus a little bit to the Blue Jays. Needs must. 12-2 loss to the Mets and Noah Syndergaard last night. Noah Syndergaard came out firing, what, he hit 100.2 miles an hour against Justin Smoke, 99.9, struck out the side, 99.9 against Josh Donaldson. He had a rocky second inning, gave up a run in the third inning. I mean, this wasn't exactly, the Jays only got two runs. But it was strange because it's almost like Syndergaard's domination sort of snuck up on them. if you look at how that game started or how the second and third inning went, it certainly, you'd have a difficult time forecasting a 12-2 win for the Mets, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that's for sure. And I mean, that's the advantage that you have when you have an ace caliber arm out there, is they can be, you know, faltering at times or just seemingly on the brink of allowing some damage. And then you look up at the end of the evening and they've barely allowed anything. So that was definitely Syndergaard, and such a contrast to Jaime Garcia. I mean, I don't know, you know, exactly what to make of this, because you look at his track record in the major leagues and you think that this is a guy who should be a steady back end presence. And really, he should be turning in those type of 5-inning, 2-run outings that Syndergaard delivered time after time, and yet it hasn't happened. So that's a tough one for the Blue Jays. And it's, you know, this is really the absolute wrong time for them to be dealing with a guy like Jaime Garcia struggling because of all the other struggles and issues that they have going on in that rotation.
What do you do with Jaime Garcia? I mean, I guess the question is, look, he's a fifth starter, and he's probably not giving you a whole lot worse than what you would normally expect out of a fifth starter. This probably wouldn't be an issue if it wasn't for the fact that the starting pitchers around him were struggling. I think Buck said last night going into this game, the Jays starters were 0-8 with a 6.31 ERA in the past 11 games, something like that. Jaime Garcia hasn't been very good, but as I said, it's, I think as much a product of all the other stuff that's happening around him.
And I don't think you can do much with it, because at this point, the real point where you can make a difference would be the Joe Biagini spot. And I wonder if Sammy Vigliano makes that next start, on Saturday, once his turn comes up, because, you know, Biagini has just faltered so much this year in that role. And it might be time, just not to say that you couldn't go back to Biagini in a couple weeks if you really had to, but at this point, Gaviglio is pitching better. And that's really the one spot in the rotation where you can make those decisions. So as for Garcia, I think they have to ride it out. I don't think they really have a second grade option. Except, you know, we saw Deck McGuire yesterday. It's not like you're necessarily super eager to pencil him in to that rotation spot. So I think you wait and you hope that the track record ends up being more significant than what we've seen from him so far, because the beginning of his Blue Jays career has not been a very good one.
This team is now at 500. They're 21-21. That strong start in April has petered out. I mean, I guess the good news is something bizarre seems to be happening to the Red Sox and Yankees at the same time as well. But, you know, we're what? We're about a quarter of the way through right now. What do you make of the Blue Jays at after 42 games?
It's funny. I mean, this is about where I would have pegged them to be. You know, I probably would have said, hey, they're going to be 22 and 20 or 21 and 21. And here they are. But the way that they've gotten here is definitely different than what I would have expected. I thought the rotation would have been better. I thought that you probably would be getting more from your Josh Donaldson's, to be honest, and probably more from some of your offensive players. And yet it's been the Teoscar Hernandez's. I mean, we've seen guys come up from AAA and make an impact and really cycle through at a pretty quick pace. So as for where they fit in the American League, I still think they have a shot. I mean, this is a team with you look, when you look at the reinforcement that they could have coming up this season, and I'm not just talking about Vlad Jr. here, but Alford, Danny Jansen, potentially a Sean Reed Foley. I really think that they could be a better team in the second half as far as talent than what we're seeing right now. And the rest of the American League, you know, beyond those few teams that are contending, there are a lot of weak teams that the Blue Jays are clearly better than, that they can beat up on and then potentially stay in that race. So no guarantees, but I think that they, you know, basically, as we said, going into the year, they should be in that mix for that second wild card.
When do they take a look at Danny Jansen up here? I understand that they're tied in with Russ Martin and Russ's contract. Although, you know, I think with Russ's contract, the situation is this: you have that contract next year. It ain't going anywhere. So you've got to try to manage the situation. You've got to try to have a better team, knowing that you are going to have, what, $20 million tied up in Russ and whatever it is tied up in Troy Tulowitzki. And whatever they give you is gravy. That it sucks, but hey, that's the way it is. You got to figure out a way around that. If I'm the Jays, I'm seriously thinking of bringing Danny Jansen up right now and getting him. You know, I'm not worried about his arbitration clock with Danny Jansen. I want to get him in a position where he can, if he's good enough to be my number one catcher next year, he's my number one catcher next year, and I'll worry about Russ doing something else. Do you think we may see Danny up here soon?
So I agree with you 100% on the arbitration clock stuff. I mean, with a guy like him, it's a question of when he's ready. And what we're seeing right now suggests, and, you know, of course, we're not down there watching every one of these, right, you know, pitch blocking or game calling, those things that are so significant to a catcher's game. But you look at the offensive line, he is crushing AAA pitching. I mean, this is a serious, sustained breakout that he's had over the course of a season plus right now. And I think where he's at is you could comfortably call on him if Luke Maley had, you know, some sort of oblique issue, Russ Martin pulls a hamstring. You can call on Danny Jansen at any time, and I don't think you have to worry about, hey, is he going to be overwhelmed, because he's had another full big league spring training. He's now showing that he can hit AAA pitching in a much more sustained way than he did at the very end of last year. So I think if they need him, he's ready. I don't see him being called up in the short term. I mean, barring more position player injuries that, you know, throw Martin into, you know, a bit more of a versatility role, and at that point you have your three catchers. But I think my read on it would be that he's there when needed, but for now they just roll with Maley and Martin.
Through 107 plate appearances, by the way, if anybody's interested, Danny Jansen is hitting .311. He's slashing .311, .406, .478. He had 10 extra base hits and was 3-for-3 on stolen base attempts, for whatever that's worth. But yeah, look, I just think and again, you're absolutely right, Ben. We're not down there. We don't know about his pitch blocking. We don't know about any of that. But in Danny Jansen's case, I think when he's ready, you bring him up and you kind of worry about making things work around him. And, you know, as I said, we saw Russ Martin play shortstop last night, and that's, I think, you know, something basically to keep Russ interested, something he's wanted to do. But I've said this all year. I think we're at the point where we have to move off the idea that Russ Martin's going to be the number one catcher in this team. And as I said, you've got to do what makes the team better. And if having Danny Jansen behind the plate and Russ Martin as utility player makes you better offensively and doesn't damage you defensively, then you know what? You do it. To hell with the contract, because the contract is what the contract is. And I'd rather do that than have Russ Martin hitting .103 behind the plate. I really would.
Yeah, and I think when you look at these big contracts that they have, Tulowitzki and Morales and Martin, essentially that money's gone regardless. So you just got to get
cost,
most,
right?
Exactly. And so, you know, you see the news yesterday about Tulowitzki running on an anti-gravity treadmill. I don't think you're holding your breath, Jeff. I'm certainly not holding my breath on when Tulo is going to come back here. This is, you know, of course, if he comes back and he provides something, that's great. If Russell Martin can end up hitting more in line with his career norms, they'll take it. But they also need to have these contingency plans because, you know, ultimately the back end of these contracts, by and large, are going to be less productive than they are at the front end. And, you know, it's still the Martin contract, at least, was still a good deal. The Morales contract is going to go down as a bad deal. That's pretty obvious. So what you have to do is you have to just figure out ways around it in the meantime. And if that, you know, I would tend to agree. If that means that Martin catches, you know, half the time and Jansen catches half the time next year or even later this year, it's got to be about what makes the Blue Jays the best team.
Ben, we appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much.
Anytime.